the shade. Gonna scream my name. Make you shout now, honey. Gonna make you shout.
Whether you're an independent artist or a fan that loves them, makingascene.org is the place for you. For the music fan, we bring you in-depth interviews and CD reviews from artists who are on the cutting edge of original music. For the independent artist, we bring you articles on music business, recording techniques, gear reviews, and interviews with industry professionals that give you real-world information to help you negotiate the new realities in the music industry and give you the tools you need to move your career to the next level. We bring you new content every day. MakingAScene.org is the number one resource for the independent artists and the fans that love them. Head on over and become part of the indie revolution.
Gonna rock the shade. Gonna scream my name. Make you shout now, honey. Gonna make.
There's no die, son, you gotta work late. Sometimes I wonder what I'm gonna do, cause ain't no cure for the summertime blues. Mama and Papa told me you gotta earn some money. If you wanna use a car, go riding next Sunday. Sometimes I wonder what I'm gonna do, cause there ain't no care for the summertime blues. Gonna take 2 weeks, gonna have a fine vacation. Son, but you're too young to vote. Sometimes I wonder what I don't wanna do, cause there ain't no cure for the summertime.
was Brad Guitar Wilson from his brand new release, and we got Brad on the line right now. Hey, Brad, how you doing?
Wonderful. Hello, everybody. I'm excited to have a conversation with Richard, and I look forward to being able to talk about all the things that are going on in the music industry.
Yeah, cool. Now, of course, we always start by giving the fans out there this opportunity to get to know who you are, both as an artist and as a person. And the best way to do that is through the journey that you've taken up to this point. So give us the story of Brad Guitar Wilson.
Californian. Spent a lot of time in the San Francisco Bay Area. Listened to all the great music that was coming through, especially the British bands like Jeff Beck, Eric Clapton, Jimmy Page. Moved to Los Angeles, was lucky enough to get involved with the recording studio, Cherokee Studios. Learned a lot about making records from the Robb Brothers, and found myself out there touring constantly, and chose to become a songwriter and a singer, and make that my primary goal, to create songs. And I've got well over 100 songs on Apple and BMI Music.
Nice. Okay. Now, you know, I remember when I was a kid, around 7 years old, I remember finding my parents' Victrola, that, you know, the old box record players. And I put on the 45 for Bobby Darin's Distant Shores, and it just absolutely blew my mind. And I always looked at that moment as my musical awakening. It was kind of that song gave me so many visuals and emotional feels, and it just woke me up to the potential of music and how it can make you feel and take you on these journeys. What is your earliest recollection and memory of music being that thing that woke you to that potential?
I think that I remember hearing the Rolling Stones High Tide Green Grass album, and very, very young, I think my parents had got a subscription to Columbia Records, and they had to get like 20 records.
20 records for a penny, yeah.
Yeah, and so that was one of them. And so I loved it. And then I remember, because I lived in the San Francisco Bay Area, you know, my friends we were in the suburbs on the peninsula in a town called Redwood City, and then we would go into, as a group, we would fill the car, four or more of us, and we would go into San Francisco, and they always had groups in Golden Gate Park, and of course at the Fillmore and Winterland. And probably the most electrifying moment for me was to see Cream, Eric Clapton. They were recording the Wheels of Fire album, and gosh, I was like in the 7th or 8th grade, and we went in, and back in those days they didn't have seats in Winterland or Fillmore, so you could, if you were a kid, you could press your way all the way up to the stage, and the stage in those days was not more than, you know, 4 or 5 feet high off the ground. And so I'm standing there, and Eric Clapton and Jack Bruce and Ginger Baker rip into Crossroads, and in the group I'm with, we're like, of course everybody's squeezed close to the stage, and Eric Clapton rips into the solo on Crossroads, and we, all the way back home, everybody's going, we got to get a guitar.
Okay. Now, you know, on that vein, you know, I found that, you know, every artist has that crossroad moment, you know, where career-wise, they had to make that choice, whether they go for accountant or musician. What was that crossroad moment for you where you knew that this was something you wanted to do as a vocation or avocation, you know, from that point?
Well, I was lucky enough to, you know, be next to a big city like San Francisco. So as soon as I got out of high school, I know that, you know, my family very much wanted me to pursue education and hopefully get into sports. I'm in really good health. I've been lucky to have good health my whole life. But I went to San Francisco. A bunch of us got a flat in the city, and we were all living together. And I was very fortunate that there was a singer named Kathy McDonald that had just arrived from London. She was singing on the Exile on Main Street album, two songs with the Rolling Stones. She recorded in London, All Down the Line, and another one. And she came into San Francisco, and she was putting her band together. And the bass player I had gotten to know because I was banging around town playing the guitar, and he said, geez, you ought to audition for Kathy McDonald. She just got in from London. She's working with the Stones. So I went over to the audition, and I passed the audition, and she said, okay. You know, I wasn't even old enough to go in to drink in the bars yet, and she said, you got the job. And so that was, I didn't want to go on to higher education at a university, much to the disappointment of my parents. But I went in and said, geez, I'm with this recording artist. She's got a record on Capitol Records, Kathy McDonald. She's going to be playing a lot of shows, and I'm making money. And so right out of high school, that started it all, and I never looked back. I kept being a professional musician for the rest of my life.
Okay. Now, let's talk a little bit about this new release. You know, every release has a story. There is a reason for it to be in existence, whether it's an idea or something you heard or a song idea. What is the story behind this release?
This album, which is called The Californian, is a chance for me to continue what I have been working on previously, which is a producer named Francis Buckley in Hollywood, and his skills have been kind of my partner in making these records. The Californian is me spending a lot of time in a town called Monterey, which is on the central coast of California. Carmel, Santa Cruz are nearby, Big Sur. And the dark, amazing beauty of the central coast, and anybody that's ever been to Monterey or Big Sur, and of course Big Sur is really a kind of a little bit isolated because of the Highway 1 that gets to it. But this is where artists have gone for decades, including Carmel and Monterey, and generated some really, really wonderful paintings and books. And so I really wanted to draw from the energy of this part of the state of California, which is from Big Sur to Monterey. The coastline is so natural that it was easy to take an acoustic guitar and to write this new album. And so the title, The Californian, and this is, of course, where I'm from, is just about the beauty and what California stands for in its national parks, and especially the coastline around Big Sur.
Okay. Now, is there a particular track on this that you feel connects to you personally more than any other track?
Well, you know, I always try to you know, I'm a blues fan, and so, you know, I think B.B. King's probably one of the greatest guitar players and band leaders in the history of music.
Yeah.
So, and I've seen B.B. a lot, and really, the tone of his guitar, you would recognize it no matter what. It's just, you know, it's historic. But, so on this record, I did a song. It's not a B.B. King song, but I wanted to do something that was really seriously blues. And I did a song called Groanin' the Blues by Willie Dixon. It's 6 minutes. It's a slow blues. All the musicians on it are incredible. The drummer on this album is a world-class blues drummer. Tony Brungle got the 2024 Blues Music Award Drummer of the Year. And when I was in the studio with Tony, and of course Chris Ryan from Santana on keyboards, in order to do a great slow blues, you have to have a great drummer, because it's difficult to play slow and with feeling. And so the slow blues is a very, very difficult song, especially as slow as this one is. And and Groanin' the Blues, not a lot of people have covered it. And so we went in, and I said, Tony, I'm going to do Groanin' the Blues specifically because you're the drummer on these sessions. And the feel that you can create allows the pocket to be, the whole thing to be very cohesive. So I would say if there's one song on this album that for me was a knockout, the way it turned out with the mix, the musicians, everything, it's Willie Dixon's song called Groanin' the Blues.
Okay. Now, what would you like your listeners to take away from this project as a whole?
I think the musicians are incredible. I'm lucky to have, we recorded this album virtually live, and this is something, we had a really large room, everyone's baffled, everyone can see each other. This is not a lot of overdubs. And so for me, all of my favorite records are recorded like this, and working with Francis Buckley, who's a Grammy Award winning producer, we agreed that our favorite records were done direct to disc, whether it be Sinatra or the Stones. And so we had recorded a lot of this stuff organically, and so the editing is at a minimum, and the vocal tracks editing at a minimum. So we were looking for a record that we could listen to and enjoy right along with all the great records that we grew up as kids listening to. So when you're listening to the Californian, you're hearing a record that's pretty much direct to disc.
Okay. Now, let's talk about you as a songwriter. When you sit down in front of that blank page, what is your typical process look like to get that muse flowing words onto that page?
Well, just being kind of having some fun for a moment, it's usually a deadline, but because I've booked the studio, I've got a release date, and everybody's availability, and so there is a little bit of, I do like the pressure on it, but what really gets going is I just start out with an acoustic guitar, my cell phone, a pen and paper, and I try to put together pieces that are coming to me like an antenna from either something I've heard or seen or a phrase or a riff. And so I kind of tell the musicians that I'm just putting the antenna up and starting to get stuff from living, you know, being, just getting out there and living. What was fantastic about this record is I recorded two of the songs in Brussels, Belgium, in the historic district, in a studio called ICP Studios, very famous, been there a long, long time, three huge rooms. I was in Brussels. It was an incredible experience to grab the essence of what's happening in the historic district, go in. I recorded Ready for Love, a Paul Rodgers song, and I recorded Dead Flowers from Keith Richards and Mick Jagger there. And then, but generally, it's all about moving it from the acoustic guitar to the electric guitar. And a lot of times, I'm just using a cell phone, recording it, and sending it to Francis. And, you know, 8 out of 10 times, he's saying no. And then, finally, there's some stuff that clicks, and then I go in and I demo it in a local studio near me.
Okay. Now, you had mentioned when you went into the studio, you like to do it live from the floor, which is a great way to work. I'm a firm believer in creating that authenticity, especially in a genre like the blues. But, you know, I've been a recording engineer since the late 70s, and I always am amazed when that moment happens, when everything falls into place and all of a sudden there's this magic and you know what's happening. You could feel it. When you go to the playback, you know you caught it. What was that moment for you in the studio where you found that vibe, that magic was happening?
This was recorded over a few days in Hollywood, this particular record. I think, you know, for me as an artist, especially the songwriter and singer, I really look to the musicians to put their feelings into it. So I am always trying to listen to what their response. It's very exciting as a songwriter to have your song come to life by really talented musicians. They take the song and it becomes real from what I had envisioned it. So the band feel is critical to me, the feeling of a band. And I honestly, to answer your question, I try to step back and listen and watch the expression on Francis Buckley's face when we all go into the control room and we're listening to the playback. We've maybe tracked it not more than 3 times, 4 at the most, because we don't want to, you know, just go beyond the feel of the song. But it's that moment in the control room when I can see all the musicians involved, including the engineer Francis, and everybody collectively knows that's the take.
Okay. Now, tell me about the lineup. You mentioned Tony on drums, but who else is on this?
Well, the Hollywood crew is Chris Rhine on keyboards, who is Gino Vanelli, Santana, so many wonderful tours he's done. We really couldn't do it without his work on the keyboards. He's just really incredible. The bass players are Hal Cragen and Brian Beal. So that would give us the keyboards, bass, drums, myself on guitar, Francis. So there's not that many people in the studio in Europe. My touring band there is Toto Poznantic on drums, Fabrizio Erba on bass, and Luca Catalfamo on keyboard. So in Europe, it's a fantastic band. We did 2 of the songs, Dead Flowers, Ready for Love in Brussels, and the musicians I just mentioned, we worked in Hollywood.
Okay. Now, get into a lot of conversations with musicians on a wide variety of topics, and there are a few really hot button topics that musicians get into these discussions over, and one of them is, of course, artificial intelligence. Now, we all know AI is here. It's going to be part of our lives, whether we like it or not, or even whether we know it or not. It's going to be part of our everyday lives. And in the music industry, I think a lot of musicians are looking at AI with this certain sense of fear that, you know, they don't want AI to replace the songwriter or create music that does not connect to the authenticity of the human condition, you know?
Yeah.
And I can see that fear, you know, and I understand that. But I'm of a certain age where I've seen technological advances in the music industry that have really turned the industry on its ear several times. I remember the drum machine and MIDI. I mean, you know, when they came on the scene, I mean, the industry was running around with their hair on fire. During the disco era of the late 70s, I mean, I'll be honest, you know, it was abused. They came out with some really schlocky music back in that era. I mean, it was some good, some, you know, I mean, disco was just the evolution of funk. But there was some, you know, some producers who thought, well, I don't need musicians. I need a sequencer and a synthesizer and I'm good. And eventually the consumer, you know, kind of got acclimated to it and said, okay, I need something better. I need something more authentic than that. And they kind of shunned it. But they became tools to the music, you know, industry. And that's how I see AI becoming. It will initially be abused, but it will eventually become a tool, you know, on the creative end. But I look at AI in three distinct pillars. The creative end being one pillar. The second pillar being in the studio, the production end. I mean, we all know that recorded music has lost its status of product. We have to be efficient in the studio. So utilizing AI to give us starting points in mixing and mastering and getting a good quality sound is going to be really important to become that efficient, you know, person in the studio. And that's that pillar in itself. But the most important one is the third pillar. The biggest advantage of AI and its biggest strength is that in its ability to analyze a massive amount of data and then give us actionable items based on a specific goal. Now, I did an experiment. There is a site called Cyanite. It's cyanite.co. And it allows you to upload a song, and it will analyze the sonic signature of that song and give you a bunch of data points on that music. It will tell you the meta tags you need to put on it in order for it to properly come up in a search engine. It will tell you the genre. It will tell you what artists are making music like you. It will give you a list of playlists that are playing music like you. It will give you the song's mood, which of course is important for sync licensing. It will give you a mood chart of the song, which tracks the mood through the verses and choruses. It will give you a paragraph description that you could use to market the song, and plus all these other data points. And I took that data and I put it into ChatGPT, and I said, based on the listening habits of the Spotify listener and other streaming services, what kind of content do I need to create and where do I need to put that content in order to reach the largest potential fan base for this song? And it spit out a very detailed marketing plan. This is the content you need. This is where you need to put it. Then you got to create this content, and then you put that here. and each one was tailored for this social media platform that I was putting it on to attract the biggest potential fan base for that song. And I found that to be really interesting, because when you think about it, there's over 900 years of music on Spotify. We don't have enough lifetimes to listen to everything that's up there. So we have to be really specific in how we attract our tribe, our group of people. And in order to do that, we're going to need help. And AI is the perfect tool to take care of the boring stuff. Writing the bios that we need, or the one sheets that we need. Creating, you know, the marketing that we need in order to, you know, attract that fan base. And identifying the fan base, where they are, and what they're reacting to. So to me, I think a lot of musicians are missing the boat when they hear the word AI and immediately going to the creative end and not thinking, oh, I could use this to promote and market my music and make it more efficient so I'm not spending a whole lot of time on social media. What do you think of that perspective?
Well, what you just described, I'm excited to check that out. I totally understand what you're saying, and I think that's an important advancement for all musicians of all genres. You know, I think that everything that you've just laid out with AI is all positive. I don't really see the negative here. I think it's important that an artist learn, understand the parameters of the AI software or whatever portion of AI they're focusing on, understand it, learn it, and then access it. It's the future is important to use the tools that are available to us, and I do not see it as a threat. I don't see it as a problem. I am very excited about what you just described. As soon as I get off the phone, I'm looking forward to going to this site and learning more about it. I think it's fantastic that you would, you know, introduce it. But yeah, I think that the human will always be able to work with the tools given and come up with something cool. So yeah, it's how exciting that we are getting more software and someone to challenge us with these ideas. I look forward to AI challenging me and saying, well, what about this? What about that? And right. I'm going to say, great, that sounds fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, even on the creative end, I see AI more as a creativity catalyst than I do as a replacement. You know,
absolutely.
I mean, you know, even as a songwriter, you know, you're always listening for that turn of phrase, whether it's overhearing it in a restaurant or you see it in a meme on the internet. You know, oh, that could be a good song title, or oh, wow, that's a good idea. That could be a song somewhere in there. And it's the same thing with AI. It's just having a conversation with a larger brain. And, you know, you could say, hey, you know, what are some other ways I could say this and allow that to spark that creativity within you, you know?
Oh yeah, absolutely. What you've just been describing there is fantastic. And I think that the future to me is very bright. I look forward to coexisting with a flow of technology coming at me. It's going to make me a better musician and a better artist. And all of the things that musicians are today, they wear so many hats trying to create, to work on their career. You have so many different hats on to have virtually almost saying like a robot next to you saying, you know, that I can help you. be more efficient, and I can also help you to get farther faster. Geez, I love it.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, that's the thing. I think a lot of musicians miss that point. You know, they're so fixated on the fear that they don't look at the potential, you know?
Oh, the potential is fantastic. I mean, obviously you're dealing with two things coexisting together, organic artistry of just being a human with all the things that a human, you know, is involved with, all the things that that are human, and then coexisting right alongside this fantastic technology that is just actually making you think more. And so, yeah, do you want to think more? Well, then you need something to run right alongside of you as a co-runner that's, you know, keeping the pace. But that will never, ever replace feelings where someone is, you know, feeling something. And that can be anything from happiness to sadness to love to joy to, you know, to an idea coming. I mean, feeling things are the beauty of being a human. And that's what's so exciting when you're doing a concert and the crowd and the band hit the note together. Boom! All of a sudden, the audience and the band are being very, very human together. And the technology to get to that point, it's merely just a vehicle.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. Now, we all know, you know, like we mentioned before, that, you know, recorded music has essentially lost that status of being a product. Nobody's really buying it anymore. And, you know, streaming is the way the consumer has embraced to consume music. I mean, you know, cars don't have CD players in it anymore. I mean, you really can't even get a CD player in Best Buy anymore. You have to go to a thrift store in order to find one. So, you know, we have to deal with this world that, you know, that streaming is the way that consumers are consuming music. But the streaming revolution has really caught us with our pants down. The way it is structured, the revenue from streaming, I mean, let's face it, this is not sustainable. We cannot continue to run as an industry if we're not going to compensate the artists for their work. You know, you got Daniel Ek, who has amassed more money than any artist in history, and he's never played a note. So there is something wrong there. You know, Spotify instituted their policy where, you know, they're not going to pay any track that has less than 1,000 streams a year. That put millions, hundreds of millions of dollars into their bottom line, and took the money away from the independent artist community. And we need to start looking at something different. We need to start looking at how do we change that dynamic. And one of the things that I noticed, if you look at like Chartmetric, they stated that 81% of the tracks that are on Spotify have less than 1,000 streams. That's huge. That's a lot of music up there that has less than 1,000 streams. If you add another 9% on top of that, you can easily say, and being conservative, that 90% of the artists on Spotify are independent, are indie artists. And that's just being conservative. 90% is a huge, powerful base. No matter what, 90% of anything is a huge, powerful base. Now, if we think about it, we can change the industry. And one of the things that I've been really watching closely and really looking into is this whole world of the decentralized music industry. And what has happened is there are these technologies that are out there that could definitely help the independent artist change the way the industry does business. For example, let's take streaming, for instance. There are streaming services that use the blockchain, which is the software technology that cryptocurrency uses as the security measure. And there are these new streaming services that are built upon these blockchains, one of them being Audius.co, Resonate is another. And because they're on the blockchain, they're decentralized. In other words, no company, no person, no board of directors can own the service. It is owned by the users and by the artists who put up their content. And because of that, and because of how it operates, they can pay up to 80% of the incoming revenue directly back to the artist. Now, say for instance, you had a co-writer on a song. These payments are basically regulated by what they call smart contracts. So every time your song is accessed, it triggers the contract. You can put in to that smart contract the percentages that each co-writer gets when the song is accessed. So now the song gets accessed and it immediately sends out a payment to all the co-writers in the song. On top of that, you can create shares in your songs based on these streaming royalties. Again, not having to do the accounting, these can be embedded into this smart contract, and when someone accesses the song, you, your co-writers, and your investors all get a payment immediately upon access. What do you think of that as a potential?
Well, it's fantastic. It's futuristic. It has a tremendous amount of potential. If it was promoted and people were aware of it, as you point out, 90% of the independent artists on Spotify would gravitate to a platform like that. They don't know about it. I think the marketing of as a solution, what you've just described, is an excellent counter to the fact that the artists are not being paid by these large technology companies. The artists would support that, including the fans, but the ability to market these platforms on a worldwide basis, you would need several million dollars in marketing to start to pry away artists from Spotify. I mean, because what you just described to me sounds great, but I had never heard of it until you just described it.
Well, I mean, think of it this way. Let's say you don't have millions of dollars to market this. We, as independent artists, say 90% of the artists that are on Spotify, let's say we're at a gig, and we say to our fans that are at that gig, hey, if you can show that you're following us on Audius, we'll give you a sticker. We'll give you a corn dog, or we'll take a picture with you and tag you on social media. I mean, it's not that difficult. I mean, the consumer embraced Spotify not because they marketed it, but because it was new, different, and it was a convenient way of accessing music. You know, they didn't have this huge, marketing campaign. It was very viral how Spotify took off. The same thing can happen with these new platforms because it's not a far cry from Spotify. It's got the same kind of interface. You can create playlists. You can, have a discovery. But you're not inundated with the kind of advertising that Spotify gives you. You're not inundated with, their generated playlists that have their AI generated music in it to, you know, to beef up their bottom line. It's, and there's no corporation that you have to deal with. This is all viral. And this becomes something, you know, for the fan, an easy transition. Now, for the artist, I mean, think about this, for instance. If you wanted to send an accountant to Spotify and audit them as to, are you giving me what I'm really due, you can't. You can't see how they're counting streams. You can't audit them to see if they're giving you your 10 cents. You know? You can't. But with this new system, you can go into that
block. You're dealing with a huge corporation.
Right. But with this system, with Audius, you can go into that block at any time and see exactly how many streams you got on that song, how much money you made, how much your co-writer made, how much your investors made, anytime you want. It's totally transparent. That's the beauty of this blockchain. You can look into that block at any time. Now, there's a lot of offshoots on this as well. Give you an example. I mean, you can create, of course, the shares in your songs, and you could sell those shares to your fans. And then, let's say the fan makes a little money on those shares. He wants to resell it to someone else, which he can do on an open market. When he resells that, you get a commission off of that resale. And that's in perpetuity. As many times as those shares get resold, you get a commission off of every resale on those shares of your song. So there is a revenue stream that works in perpetuity. All right? Now, that also...
I love it.
Go ahead.
I was just saying that this is a glimpse into the future.
You would think, but it's here now. It's actually here. It's these parts and pieces are all existing right now. Let's say ticketing, for instance. Now, we all know the problem with going to a big show. You know, you try to get tickets from Ticketmaster. Of course, you get scalpers that will buy up blocks of tickets, you know, and then they up the price to, you know, God knows what, 3-4 times the, you know, the face value, and it becomes, you know, priced out of, you know, the hands of most people, most fans. Well, if you created these tickets as NFTs, you could set up the smart contract in such a way that once they're purchased, if you need to, if you resell that ticket, and if it goes beyond, let's say, 10% of the face value, that additional funds gets funneled back to the promoter or the artist, and the scalper doesn't get it. So there's a way to beat that scalping system with selling these tickets, because it's all based on these smart contracts. You know?
I think all that, yeah, I love all that. Everything that you've described is a more common sense approach to the industry, which existed really more in the 60s and the 70s when the industry was not overtaken by, you know, huge corporations. Everything you've described, both for the artist and for the ticket sales, are a more universal, common sense, artist-oriented approach to the industry. What we're dealing with is the corporate power to manipulate the audience into saying that this is the only way that you can function as an artist or as a ticket buyer or as a fan. And so they've turned, there's no light shining on what you've described. If there was a bright light on it and it was well promoted, I think a lot of people would turn to this current program that you've outlined. But unfortunately, the sad part about it is that the marketing to introduce it, even though you describe organic ways to present these kind of really positive ways to do business as an artist, and they are very, very positive, but in today's world, the noise of everything is so loud, people are often limited to how much they can be exposed to or even take in, and so in order to penetrate everyone's world, you would need something that was just so doggone revolutionary that people all of a sudden woke up to this thinking.
Well, you know, if you look at it, I mean, the consumer out there is already acclimated. You know, I remember I went to the Grammys this year, and the tickets that you needed for to get into the events at the Grammys was all digital on my phone. I can't say how many times, you know, you go into the Starbucks and, you know, someone comes by and just swipes their phone over the top of the credit card reader as a way to pay for their, you know, their drink or in a restaurant. You know, you just put your phone up with a digital wallet. So the whole concept of having digital assets and digital wallets and having, you know, digital tickets, that's already here. So everything is in place already. It's a matter of embracing it as artists and introducing it in such a way to our fan base that they say, hey, wow, that makes me cool, because I'm now on the cutting edge, because that's how things go viral. I mean, there are so many things that can be done with this technology. For example, you can create your own fan club. They call them DAOs, or Decentralized Autonomous Organizations. And within them, you can create your own coins. They call them tokens. And your fans can buy these tokens, and the tokens give them access to exclusive kind of content, whether it be a demo of a song that you recorded before you brought it into the studio, or behind-the-scenes footage of a show, or exclusive, you know, live stream of something, whatever. They can use the tokens to buy shares in your songs. They can use it to buy merch. They can use it to buy tickets. They can use it to vote. Let's say you wanted to give your fans the opportunity to vote on which single I'm going to release first, or what graphic do I want to put on this single. You know, and there's a host of things that you could do with these tokens. And this is all part of this whole same ecosystem that all exists right now. And if we as artists look at the pieces that are all around us in this, what they call Web3, and combine them and say, we can create an industry out of this. And if we create it, they will come. The fans, the consumer, will come, because they're already acclimated to it. They're already ready to accept it. It's just a matter of putting it in their way and saying, hey, look what you can do if you join this, or you pick up this NFT. You can make money off of my song. You can invest in me as an artist. Join my, you know, buy some tokens and become part of the exclusive access that you have to my content. So it's all there. It's just a matter of getting it in place and us as artists adopting it. 90% of the artists on Spotify, that's a huge, huge, powerful group of people that can change the industry.
I totally agree. Absolutely. I think that it would be enough people if they embrace these new platforms and these new this way of presenting their work, then it would be a very quickly a powerful change in the industry, and it would be the new music industry. A lot of sometimes life with the with surviving and learning is overwhelming, and so it's a slow process of education, the mind almost being like a muscle to embrace the information that you have just outlined and be able to make it into your day-to-day thinking. It takes time. It almost has to be gone over and over again to present it to where gradually people would use it every 24 hours as easy as they do a wallet on an Apple phone. So how to bring this thinking into a 24-hour cycle so people think about it every 24 hours and part of their day-to-day life, that, as you point out, the artists would have to make it on everything the artist does, it is a portion of it is dedicated to re-educating the audience to this new thinking. It exists, but learning is always something that has to be kind of done over and over and over again until it becomes casual. So everything you've just outlined is almost like, for a lot of people, lifting weights. So you just got to get them in the gym, start lifting those weights, and then the weights are going to be a lot easier to lift. But currently, and I love everything you just pointed out, I'm going to embrace it and put it into my life. But to get the 90% of the artists on Spotify and to people in general to start thinking, you know what, I'm going to break out of my regular pattern and start a new pattern, that is the obstacle and that is the challenge.
Well, the beauty of it is you don't have to break out of the pattern. You can still do what you're doing now and add this to your repertoire and institute it little at a time. You know, as you become comfortable with one segment, you add the next and the next. Like adding yourself to Audius is painless, easy, and it costs nothing. Because you can go to audius.co, create an account, upload your music, and it's done. You're up. You're there. You know, it's just another platform, just like Spotify, Pandora, Breaker, any of those other platforms that are out there. So now you're part of the blockchain streaming world. All of a sudden, that's done. You're already ready. You're going. Next thing you know, you start creating some NFTs. You know, you make them for sale for your fans. You see how it goes. You build it, you know. And that's kind of the idea behind the book I wrote, Breaking Chains. The whole idea behind the book is to give artists a real-world knowledge in plain language and a guidebook on how to do these things, why you're doing them, and how you can combine this all together to create an economy for the music industry that's fair and equitable to the artist, that cuts out the middleman structure and creates this world where there is a direct fan-to-artist relationship, not only in content and access, but also in revenue. where the fan gives the revenue directly to the artist and knows that it's going directly to the artist and gets the results through that access that the artist appreciates that. And, you know, that is a powerful relationship, you know, and I think that's one of the things that is missing in the industry is that relationship.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm very, very excited to learn about this. I look forward to reading your book and learning more, because the wheel does turn. And before, there was a time before Spotify, there was a time before the industry as we know it today, and there will be, the wheel will turn, and there will be a new music industry, and it is probably turning towards this description you've outlined. So it will not always be a Spotify, not always be Apple, not always be the way it is today, because everything always does change. And it's exciting to take a to look forward to introducing this new thinking, both from an artist point of view and a fan point of view, to get ready to make the change, because all things will change, whether it be from vinyl to cassette to CD to downloads. Everything will change, and Spotify will ultimately probably change to this one of these new platform descriptions, as artists are looking to be paid for their work, and they'll continue to search for the opportunity. And as you're just pointing out, that opportunity exists today. And they're just waiting for the light to be turned on, and they're going to go towards it.
Right. I mean, remember, you know, we all thought when iTunes came out that Apple was going to dominate the music industry forever. That didn't happen. You know, we all thought Napster was never going to go away, but it was replaced. You know, the industry is constantly changing. Spotify is going to be replaced. The question is, what is it going to be replaced by? And how do we as artists control that? We got caught with our pants down with Spotify. Let's not let it happen again. Let's see if we can control this and at least move the industry in the right direction.
I definitely agree. And I think some of the biggest artists today, whether it be Springsteen or Taylor Swift or Paul McCartney or any of the U2, any of the largest artists out there working, are also supportive of a change in the industry. And it's hopefully we could get some help from some of these larger artists to introduce to the general public these platforms and this new technology you're talking about as a something that is good for an artist, is whether it be Bruce Springsteen or U2, all the way down to the guy just beginning out. We really need the support of some larger audiences, artists, to show the audience, you know, about this new stuff.
Well, if you go to the Audius website, audius.co, you'll see that the artists that are supporting and endorsing this new platform are like Katy Perry, Jason Derulo, Pusha T, Nas. All these artists are going to this platform and saying, wow, this is a great idea. We're supporting this. In fact, I think Katy Perry and Nas and Jason Derulo are actually on the advisory board for Audius. So, you know, it's getting that larger artist endorsements now. Like I said, all this is here. I mean, everything exists. This is not the future. This is the now. The question is, we need to, as artists and as you know, individual businessmen, take this technology, create an economy out of it, and introduce that economy to our fans and say, check this out. And the fans will embrace it. The consumer will embrace this because it is convenient. It is new. It's on the cutting edge. And we all know that when something goes viral, it's because it's something new and on the cutting edge. Fans and consumers love that.
Yeah, I think it's exciting. This is the first time learning of it, and I look forward to checking it out. You know, I'm going to be checking this out tonight, absolutely.
Oh, great. Well, you know, I really appreciate you coming on the show and talking with me. And it's always a great conversation we have. And we're going to give everyone out there a double shot from your new release. You guys are going to love it. Just turn up loud.
Walking down this rocky road, wondering where my life is leading. Crawling on to the very
thrown away my blues. I'm so tired of morning. Oh, trying to groan.
Yeah. rock the shade. Gonna scream my name. Make you shout now, honey. Gonna make you shout.
Whether you're an independent artist or a fan that loves them, makingascene.org is the place for you. For the music fan, we bring you in-depth interviews and CD reviews from artists who are on the cutting edge of original music. For the independent artist, we bring you articles on music business, recording techniques, gear reviews, and interviews with industry professionals that give you real-world information to help you negotiate the new realities in the music industry and give you the tools you need to move your career to the next level. We bring you new content every day. MakingAScene.org is the number one resource for the independent artists and the fans that love them. Head on over and become part of the indie revolution.